Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Paramatma Sandarbha Adhyayana 2, Adhikarana 7, the jiva is always dependent on the Paramatma, page 92. Okay, we have the Purva Pakshas. The jiva itself, the upadhi, with Brahman as the substrate of the upadhi. But it means the jiva, instead of saying you cover Brahman and then you get, is jiva itself directly the upadhi that is covering, right? At liberation, the jiva, as an upadhi, would be destroyed. Thus, the argument is not acceptable, since jiva is eternal. And if the jiva is destroyed, then what are you worried about? Because the point is that jiva is destroyed, you never become Brahman anyway. So then what would be the meaning of their whole philosophy? Right? They're just trying to find different ways to argue the point. Right? There's no fault if the upadhi made of ignorance is what is destroyed. But then ignorance, which is the cause of the jiva, cannot be caused by the jiva. This argument suffers from the fault of ignorance taking shelter of itself. Right? As well, Ishwar is also, remember, that's because it's said that you cover Brahman by ignorance, you get the jiva. But then you ask, if you ask him, okay, well, where does this ignorance come from? Oh, that comes from the jiva. As well, Ishwar is also created by ignorance, right, according to their philosophy. Thus, Ishwar cannot be the cause of ignorance. Right? So, even here, if Ishwar is created by ignorance, Ishwar can't be the cause of the ignorance. So that means Jiva can't be the cause of the ignorance. The Ishwar can't be the cause of the ignorance, right, in this. Ignorance must be caused by pure consciousness. The remaining alternative, but this pure consciousness is still produced by ignorance. This is all incomprehensible. How does the single conscious entity become the ignorance seen in a person like Devadatta? The ignorance of this person is... The ignorance of this person is caused by that jiva's ignorance. Brahman, which has this ignorance, must be the shelter of this ignorance and be affected by it. Right? Then you have... Okay, that's one way to do it. The jiva in his pure state can never achieve liberation, since his pure state is also related to ignorance, right? So you can't get liberated, because by that concept of liberation that they're talking about, then Brahman must be the cause of this ignorance. And in this, because we're talking about that as being separately conscious and aware and all that kind of thing, then you also have the aspect that... So then Brahman has to be the shelter of ignorance, and then by being the shelter of ignorance, it has to be affected by the ignorance, then being affected by the ignorance, then you get the jiva. So then the whole point is then what's the point of being liberated? You know, one, you don't exist, and then this, what you claim that you're attaining, is also then, affected by ignorance. So then, what kind of liberation is being offered here by the Mayavadis? Does that make sense? So when you get into it, each part of their philosophy has a problem with another part. You know, you say, oh, this is a problem. Then they'll say something else that seemingly solves this, but it creates a new problem. So you can understand if that's happening, it must be material. You know, like Prahlad Maharaj says, the cure is worse than the disease. So on the material platform. So each time they try to solve a problem, they create another one. And if you keep going, it'll come right around to the beginning. Again, yeah. Moreover, this ignorance cannot exist in the condition of Ishwara, according to Scripture. So Ishwara can't have this, but according to them, Ishwara does have this. In commentating on Brahma Sutra 115, even Shankara says, the jiva arises from opposition to knowledge. Right? So now that will be in line, we'll be saying, knowledge means as servant of the Lord, how we relate to the Lord, how we deal with the Lord. So opposition to that, that will create that. Ishwara is knowledge arising from the Sroop having no obstacles. Shruti says, so Ishwara here is not therefore caused by ignorance. Says Ishwara's knowledge arising from the Sroop having no obstacles. So illusion would have to be an obstacle. Avidya would have to be an obstacle. Shruti says, Ya sarva gya, he is omniscient, claiming that the jiva is a reflection, pratibimba, or shadow, abhasha, caused by an upadi, created by ignorance, has the same fault. Right? So it can't be these things, because then if Ishwara is perfect, then how would you get this aspect? Does that make sense? Yeah. Vritti, in order to appreciate the depth and profound brilliance of the author in pinpointing the fallacies in the arguments of the Mayavadis, it would be worthwhile to know a bit about the history and the prominent theories of the Mayavad doctrine. History of Advaitavad. Though the Advaitavad existed from a long time, it owes its systematization as a doctrine to Gurupada, 7th to 8th century A.D., he's the Parma Guru of Shankara. So it's always been there, because Dattatreya and others are all professing this. They're just bringing out the Brahman aspect. There's no such thing technically as Mayavad before. That then Shankaracharya is putting together, because he's trying to bewilder the Buddhists. You know. But before that, of just having realization of the Lord up to the Brahman level, but not knowing there's anything beyond, that's been going on for a long time. So this Gaudapada, who wrote his famous Karikas on the Mundakya Upanishad, and Shankara, A.D. 788 to 820, who is famous for driving away the atheistic Buddha philosophy out of India. Shankara's commentaries on the Prashtanatraya, Upanishads, Brahma Sutras, and Bhagavad Gita, form the bedrock on which the latter Advaitins built their edifices. Though Shankara wrote profusely, clearly enunciating the main doctrines of his school, there are certain places in his writings wherein the important aspects of certain doctrines are deliberately left vague to confuse the atheists. This has naturally resulted in the growth of quite a voluminous post-Shankara Advaita literature, leading to different prashtanas, or schools of thought, of which three schools gain prominence. Right? Because he's beginning giving things that are very, very logical, you know, giving Shastra and all that, so he's able to, you know, convince everybody. But at the same time, is in areas he leaves, doesn't leave very well documented. So that themselves, because they accept that he's there, they'll just take it, I don't understand. Rather than, no, you know, this is the absolute. So because of that, then they speculate. And the idea is then you're bewildering. That's what he says. He bewildered the atheists. That was what Bhagavatam mentions. And so then by this bewilderment, then they're going to speculate and just go on and on and on developing doctrines and keeping themselves busy. But at least then they're not Buddhists anymore. But because it's bewildering and it's not logical, it can be defeated then afterwards by the Vaishnavacharyas. Yeah. These are, one, the Brahmati school, based on the views of Vachaspati Misra. B, the Vartika school, based on the views of Sureshwara, and C, the Vivarana school, based on the views of Padmapada and Prakashatma.
Prakashatma.
Okay, Prakashatma. So, Padmapada was definitely, he was a disciple of Shankara. Mm-hmm. So these others are also?
Yes. Vachaspati Mishra is a direct disciple, and Sureshwara also.
And Sureshwara and Prakashatma?
He actually popularized the Padmapada's...
Okay, so he's coming later.
He came, I think, 2 centuries later.
Okay. But it's based on Padmapada, but then yes. He gives some little tweaks. Okay, so now we're hearing the Brahmati school. Okay, Vivartika school. Oops.
One page
more. Oh, there we go. The next page, okay.
Basically, after this, Jiva Goswami explains each school and all. So that's why I...
He just brought it up so we know what he's talking about.
We know what he's talking
about. Okay. The Brahmati school. The Brahmati school established by Vachaspati Mishra, 9th century AD, propagated the theory called Avachedavad.
The bifurcation.
This is bifurcation.
Yeah,
okay.
I wrote it back
then. Hmm?
I should have written it before.
Yeah, so put it in now. This school is built around the Brahmati, along with its subsidiary commentaries, Kalpatru of Amalananda. What is the Brahmati? That's a book.
Brahmati is his wife's name. There is a story I just mentioned in the footnote.
No, but what's the Brahmati?
The Brahmati is the school name itself. The whole.
But it says this school is built around the Brahmati.
Okay. Afterwards, later on.
So why not just say this school is built around Brahmati? No, but it says along with subsidiary commentaries.
Yeah. There is no the. Because what he wrote is called Brahmati.
And that's the whole point. Is if he wrote his book is called Brahmati?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the point. Around the book Brahmati, around his commentary or something, or his
commentary work.
Yeah, so his commentaries,
yes.
Brahmati, you know, or around the Brahmati and put his commentaries or something, along with subsidiary commentaries by Kalpatru of Amalananda, 13th century AD, that he calls it Brahmati after his wife, but the point is it's not based on his wife, it's based on a commentary.
That's my, yes.
You know, that happens to be named after his wife.
Yes.
13th century AD. And Parimala of Appaya Dikshita. 16th century AD. Brahmati is Vachaspati's celebrated commentary on the Shankara Bhashya of Brahma Sutras. Why don't you just put that up?
Okay, Mara.
The school is built around Brahmati. Vachaspati celebrated, then you can put that you know, put a dash or something. Commentary on Shankara Bhashya, along with subsidiary commentaries by these others.
Okay.
You know, and there. Okay, footnote 5. Vachaspati, a scholar from very young age, had vowed to take sannyas after writing a commentary on Shankara Bhashya. But out of pressure from his mother, Vatsala, he got married to a very chaste lady named Brahmati, who opted to marry him even after being aware of his vow. The moment Vachaspati reached home with the bride, he sat on the veranda of the house and started writing. He continued writing day and night. He was so busy that he had forgotten that he had a wife. One fine night, his book of commentaries was completed. So Vachaspati was about to get up from his seat, and suddenly in the lamplight, he found a woman quietly serving him his dinner plate. He asked her, "Who are you, and what are you doing here at this time?" She replied, "You are so immersed in writing the commentaries, you have completely forgotten that many years ago you had married me. I am Brahmati, your wife." Vachaspati was shocked to realize that for 7 years his wife had been serving him dutifully without him even being aware of it. Vachaspati expresses immense gratitude for his wife and said, "What will you do, my Devi, when I am gone? And how will you look after yourself?" With a smile, she replies, "Pati Dev, husband, the force that brought me to you and gave me this opportunity to serve you will look after me. Your devotion and sincerity towards your work will keep inspiring me. As a tribute to his great wife's sacrifices, he named his commentary on her Brahmati. He said, "All I have, my life goal, my karma, life's work and purpose of life, I am surrendering to your feet. Still, I think nothing can match your love." Thus, his commentary and later the whole school of thought is known by her name. Okay. The views of this school can be briefly summarized as follows. Avidya cannot abide in Brahman. It abides in the jivas, and is plural, since the jivas are plural. Footnote 6. It is believed that the Brahmatari commentary is based on the teachings of Mandana Misra, a Karma Mimamsa philosopher who became a disciple of Shankara after losing a debate to which his wife, Ubhaya Bharati, acted as a judge. Thus, in his theory, the jiva is seen as the locus of avidya, because of which the aspect of karma gains prominence. Okay.
So the whole theory is, every theory has their attachments.
Yeah, they all go back, like that.
The previous attachments, so they bring into focus something which they want.
Yeah. Brahman is the material cause of the world, not as the locus of avidya. Locus means where it's centered.
Yeah.
But as the object of avidya is supported by the jivas, maya is only an accessory cause. So they don't say where maya comes from. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. None of them will say that. Is that they don't know. Mm-hmm. Okay. But now, if Brahman is the object of avidya, supported by the jiva, because they're trying to say the jiva is focused on Brahman, but how is the material energy focused on Brahman? Right? But he's saying it's the cause, but they don't actually say how it's the cause.
Yeah.
You know, what is it made of? Where did it come from, right? Just as a pot limits the infinite sky in itself, avidya of the individual limits Brahman and makes it appear like a jiva. So basically speaking here, the Brahman is the jiva.
Mm-hmm.
So avidya cannot abide in Brahman. But the Brahman is a portion of the jiva is a portion of Brahman. But if avidya can't reside in Brahman or take shelter of Brahman, then how is it you get jivas, which are Brahman? Right? Does that make sense? So they contradict themselves here. Makes it appear like a jiva. So in this way, there's no jivas, it's all Brahman. So if this just appears like it, what's the whole point? Why do you have to endeavor? Another point of importance is the school that the Mahavakyas do not produce anubhava, immediate cognition. It is the mind seasoned by meditation that gives such experience. Right? So you have the Mahavakyas, they aren't producing your understanding like that. It's the mind is producing it by meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, but the point is the Mahavakyas are supposed to, our Veda is supposed to be revealed by Veda.
Mm-hmm.
But here they're saying the mind is revealing. But the mind's dead matter. It's made of avidya. So how would avidya remove avidya?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can say, we'll take out a thorn with a thorn. But then the point is, you also have the point of you can't wash blood away with blood.
Yes.
Though this theory is widely recognized as one of the best interpretations of Shankara's philosophy by the modern scholars, it has a fundamental flaw on how the unlimited Brahman becomes limited by ignorance. Vartika school. The Vartika school, established by Sureshwara, 9th century AD, propagated the second theory called Abhashasvad.
Shadow.
Yeah, I should put that in there. So you have the other one is bifurcation.
Yes.
And then this is shadow. Okay. Vartika Prasthana gets its designation from the exposition contained in the Vartikas, or commentaries in verse, of Sureshwara on Shankara's Bhashyas, on the Briharanyaka and Taittiriya Upanishads, according to this school. So they're writing on different Upanishads then. Seems that taking those as main. Because they'll be talking about different things, so then they study that and they become perfect. Which is a traditional aspect, as you see in the Vedas. It mentions when you're chanting the opening for the invocation for the mantra, it mentions which sage has become perfect by it's better you stay in your spot. You need to lean and stuff, maybe move over here. Because otherwise I'm looking at him and then you lean over and it kind of is distracting. Does that make sense? You know, if you're comfortable like that, move there. There's plenty of space, then you can lean and do all whatever you need to do. According to this school, Brahman is the material cause of this world and not Maya. Okay, and before they're saying Brahman is the material cause not as a locus but as the object of avidyas. Maya is an only accessory cause. So both of them are saying Maya is not creating the world. Brahman is creating. Right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. The locus of avidya is Brahman and not the jivas. While in the other one, it's the jivas, not Brahman. So that's where they differ there. That Brahman is where is the focus of avidya. Avidya is one only and not many. So there's only one avidya. But we'll say there's two. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. Right? So what's theirs? I'm the enjoyer, right? But they don't mind being the controller. So they only accept one avidya.
Like for the various one, there are many avidyas because it has to bifurcate each jiva from the original Brahman.
Oh, so there's so many jivas, and here there's just one.
Yeah.
Okay. So it just depends on whether it's vyasti or samasti, right? Yes.
All right, so they write the commentaries on Shankara's commentaries, basically. Is
yes,
that right?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So, what is the need to write? Are they not clear about his own teaching or what? Because now we have Shankara's teaching and then three others, but what is the pure Shankara's teaching then? Because we only heard of these guys.
Yes. Well, the point was made before is when he's writing this, or is it? Though Shankara wrote profusely, clearly enunciating the main doctrines of his school, there are certain places in his writings wherein the important aspects of certain doctrines are deliberately left vague to confuse the atheist. Therefore, in trying to clarify those points, that's where these come up. So this whole point of how this creation came about, how the jiva came about, he must have left those vague. He talks on other things because you can be very strong on certain things, you know, about we're covered by illusion, we have to elevate ourselves, because you have the five elements, aspects of consciousness, all these things. So whatever is actually clear, and the verse itself is talking about a oneness or an absolute, then that he'll be strong on. But actually, the whole point of creation and all that, the primary creation, second, that he's not talking about much. And so because of that, then they get into this. And just like, you know, you're seeing with the, you were mentioning yesterday, is that when you come across certain points, then, you know, the nature of the jiva of that, then people have to go right into that and get into details within that that aren't actually important. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So they're doing the same thing. It's just the material quality that... ignorance means what's not important you make important, what's important you make not important. So what's important, you'll say, oh, that's theory. And what's not so important is secondary, you'll say, no, that's the real thing. So that's what all they're doing. So that's why it says, why Prabhupada says Shankara's writings aren't actually so distracting. Because he just writes on that oneness aspect. But he's not necessarily saying anything that's opposed to Vaishnavism. He's just bringing out, overemphasizing the oneness, and not really talking about the difference. But then it says, but his followers, then they make these three schools. Now this is then where the dangerous stuff comes in, because they just speculated on what he said and then came up with these ideas. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Also, you know, it's just like, remember before, you had this one point and then suddenly here there's two books on where does the jiva come from, when it's a topic that you're not even supposed to be really talking about.
Right.
Let alone have two books. Right? You know, so that's these three schools. They're writing on stuff that actually doesn't need to be written on. It means, where does the jiva come from? Like that, the falling and all that. And so they're just taking those topics and then making it into something very big. Is that all right?
Yeah, I think with the difficulty, if we don't follow the tradition or Shankara as an acharya in their case, then they write something that after a period of time, it becomes irrelevant. You have to write something again. And then,
then
it's like it has no end, basically.
Well, you'll look at it. If you have something that's more clear, then it's just like, how many branches of Judaism are there? Right? Not so many.
No.
Like that. Basically, it's just how strict you want to be or not.
Yeah.
And then within there who are strict, basically you have the Orthodox and you have the Hasids.
Yeah.
Like that. And then within that you might get some who are into the Kabbalah or this or that. That's kind of a choice if you want or not. It's like, you know, you want some extra chili sauce on, you know, what you're eating or not. But it's not actually important in the way of being separate.
Yeah.
Because the old tradition is there, the philosophy and everything like that. Now you take that same teaching and then you bring that into Christianity. So as long as they're following the Judaic religion, then it has its foundation. It's basically just trying to be less of a smarta.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, the Niyamagraha had taken over of following the rules and regulations without actually understanding why. And you're trying to bring back some meaning, some value to it. Right? But then, you know, the idea that, how you say Judea is east, and we're in Rome, we're in the west. And so we can't follow this because we're Westerners, you know, and that's a different culture from from Judea. And so therefore, we will maintain our own culture, but take, you know, the essential points, that faith in God and, you know, the monotheistic concept and faith in the teacher. You know, and then some nice points that everybody can relate to, be nice, be good. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so then it's there, but it's unclear. How does it all connect together? Because if you're leaving out the religion, how does your philosophy connect back to the Lord in a proper way? And so then from there, then you get three main schools, just like here. You get the Catholicism, you get Orthodox, and you get Oriental. And then from there, then they, you know, the Orthodox and the Oriental didn't break up much. But the Catholicism, then because, you know, then that broke up into so many. And then you have another branch, the Protestant, which is very, you know, rejects even that. And so how do they explain anything? Where does any of their ritual come from? You know, where does their philosophy come from? Where does, you know, so it's just a principle, a material principle. If you don't stick to the what is given by the acharyas, you know, so in this case, what was the lifestyle of Abraham, Moses, you know, Isaac, Joseph, like this, these, then where's the basis? You know, so you stick to that and how that's developed and all that. And then, you know, it works. You can say, oh, no, but that's only for Judea. But then how is it you have the people following it all over the world? You know, so this whole idea is that that a locale can't be international, but my locale can be international. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, then you'd say, yes, you know, we're from America, and so therefore you can't follow the Indian stuff. Or we're from England, you can't follow the Indian stuff. But then the point is even within those places in England, what they do in the south, they don't do in the north. And then Scotland is different, Wales is different, Ireland's different. You know, and none of them, you know, get along and necessarily appreciate each other, as far as culture goes. And so, but each one thinks that what they're doing is the one for everybody. Otherwise, then yes, you can say, it's okay, you know, you say we're, you know, Krishna, where West? You know, where does West start? According to the English, it starts at Calais. You know, so they're going to say from Calais, in other words, from France, that's all Oriental. You know, that's you know, Asia. That's their opinion, right? And then you're going to have, no, that's over, Turkey is where it starts. You know? And then some others will say, you know, like this. And then it goes, so where do you start it? Where does the West start? Because in the Veda, then Bengal is east, and the farther you go west, the more degraded. So technically speaking, that means what they call the Far East is actually the Far West. And the Americas are the Midwest. You know? You know where all the farmers are. Like that. And then the Europe would be, you know, the eastern part of West. Does that make sense? And then where they say the Orient starts, that's the western part of East. So then how do you define this? Because you see, in reality, as far as being a materialist, the Orientals, they're more committed than they are anywhere else. Because they don't have so much a religion or that kind of thing. So for them, religion is just being materially successful. So you could say is they're the real Westerners. In fact, they make all the Western stuff anyway. So that becomes the problem, is as soon as you start to get into these kind of things that you're not supposed to or not needed, immediately trouble is created. So we can just see from history, it's over and over and over again. Here with Shankara, they do the same thing. With Christianity, the same thing. And you check anything, it'll always be like that. So that's the point of material history, is it always works in the same way, because it's Krishna's modes of nature. We can say whatever we like, but the modes of nature are in charge. And unless you're transcendental to the modes by following the footsteps of the previous acharyas, then you're under the modes, and it'll work the way, it'll go down the way the modes say it's going to go. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's formulas like that. So, basically, I'm the controller and enjoyer is the basis for all varieties, any variety of mundane consciousness. And then, whether, you know, what's the proportion of goodness, passion, or ignorance, that will give you different kind of things. So, goodness means there has to be some concept of duty and all that. So, you'll see that in these older things like that. But then they have the sense of duty, but then they speculate on the philosophy and everything. You know, and so therefore then they'll create what is their own duties. It's not based on the more principal duties. You know, and so you see the older old schools are also older. You know, I mean, they have those sense of duty, like Catholics have a sense of duty and like that, and authority, while Protestants don't. You know, Protestant is about myself, it's about me and God and all that kind of thing. So, you know, you see it's just the modern society is just an extension of that. It's just getting more and more about the individual, how they feel, how they think, what is everything like that. And what they think, that's the standard. Oh, he's feeling bad. You know, it's just like this. I have some feeling, oh, he feels bad about what you're doing. You know, so that's wrong. You can't do that. But you go, yes, but he feels, you know, but I feel bad about what he's doing. Oh, well, why can't you be tolerant? Why can't you be accommodating? But why can't the other guy? No, why are you, you know. So it's very biased. There's a particular attachment because the point is the conservative aspect will have a sense of duty and authority, while the liberal tends, the modern liberal doesn't. So, but according to, you know, the Vedas, they're all misers because it's all about themselves, whether it's immediate, anamoya, or extended, pranamoya. You know, like that. And then within pranamoya, whether it's more about, you know, justice and ethics, or it's more about economics. So like that, you know. So you're going to get these breakdowns, and it's just the modes of nature. They establish it. So that's the whole point, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making in the Tattva Vivek, is that you just have standard ways the modes work, and therefore you're going to get all these philosophies. So the impersonal philosophy has always been there. This is just a particular angle on it. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And you see, they contradict each other.
Yes.
You know, so here, both it means the Brahmati school and the Vartika school, like that. Then they both agree that Brahman is the material cause and not Maya. Right? How that works, I don't know. But that one is saying, the locus, the focus, the center of avidya is on Brahman in the Vartika school, and in the Brahmati, the locus of avidya is on the jiva. So right here, you already have an opposite viewpoint, because that's the point. This is the point where he left it vague. And so immediately you come up with these, because these are the natural options. And then we'll see for fun what the third school says.
No, there are more contradictions between these two.
Yeah, no, I'm just starting. That was just the first one. Yeah, and here's the Mahavakyas. Here it says, the Mahavakyas, or the great Vedic dictums, are capable of producing immediate cognition of the self as Brahman. Just by hearing them, then immediately you go, oh, that's what it means. While the Brahmati school says, no, it's by your meditation. It means you hear. In other words, here is, what's his name? Who did this? Sureshwara. In other words, Sureshwara heard from Shankara and understood it and went, oh, okay. While we see the Vachaspati Mishra, he heard and it didn't make sense. He had to contemplate. Like that. So he's saying, no, it's by contemplation. Because they're going to go by themselves. Them being conditioned souls, they will make mistakes. That's why you have to hear from authority. Otherwise, then, you know, like that. Hence, jhana bhasya, or jhana vyasa, or practice of meditation on the meanings of those dictums is not necessary. So one is saying they themselves must by that, but the point is one is saying it's only by meditation, they don't do anything. The other thing is, no, they do everything, you don't even have to meditate. Why not? They have the potency, and because they have the potency, you contemplate on it, then you'll understand more and more. That's what we'll say. So you see, is that duality comes up because of the material. That's the thing. The Vedic is not, it's non-dual. You have one opinion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes that point. In the spiritual world, there's only one opinion. There's not various of opinion, various schools of thought. There's only one school of thought. But within that, there's taste. You know, it's just like, let's say you get together those who are very expert at cooking, from different cuisines, and you talk about the science of cooking, there won't be any disagreement between them. You know, some might have some practice in something that's very interesting. Like, you know, the other day I had heard from, you know, someone who's a chef that when you're cooking and you have to add water, if you add cold water to the cooking, it will reduce the flavor. Because I can remember sometimes cooking something very exactly, and I know I got it exactly right, and then afterwards there's no taste. That's because you keep adding the cold water, and it just gets less and less. But then when I heard that, then I remembered seeing one Rajasthani cook There was the lid on the pot. You know, when he closed the pot, he put water on top. And so the water got, because he knows he's going to have, you know, by his experience, he knows he needs to put a little bit of water, but not much, just a little bit. So by the time, and then you have like, you know, 30, 45 seconds before you need to stir it again, if it's, you know, quite hot. By that time, that water is hot, because he only put a little bit. So then he grabs the lid and just turns it, and the water goes in, and then he stirs it like that. And then, you know, he sees, well, he's going to need to put water again. He puts it. So he might two or three times put the water. I didn't understand why he was doing it, but then when he made that, oh. But it's not something to, no, putting cold water improves it. You're not going to get that. It's just going to get, oh, something I didn't know about. So it's going to be one way of thinking. Now, what taste is good, how you would put it together, but the science of it, they're never going to argue about. But, you know, what they would mix with what and this, and, you know, especially when you get into fusion kind of things, what you can mix with what. You know, can basil go with cumin? You know, stuff like that. You know, so that kind of thing is, then you're going to have difference of taste. So therefore, some are going to have awe and reverence, some are going to have sweetness, there's going to be a mix, which of the five rasas, like that. That's therefore going to make the taste. But as far as philosophy goes, there's only one. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, the Mayavadi school also like cooking.
They're cooking in a different way, but they don't understand the science.
Yes, they have different results, but it's no taste.
No taste. They put in too much cold water.
They don't cook the main preparation, they're only busy cooking their chutney.
Yeah, something on the side, yeah. Okay, and the jivas are but abhashas, or fallacious appearances of Brahman in the individual minds. So the jiva does, it's only in the individual mind. Where does the mind come from? Yeah, so individual mind, why is there individual? How did you get an individual mind? So these are points, if I just say it, it's just in the individual mind, I'll go, oh yeah, right. Right? But the whole point is, where does that individual mind means, then there must be a conscious entity like this, so therefore, how is it Brahman is individual? So then these are our shadow. But shadow, then, basically you'll only get one. So that can give rise to, you know, the one jiva. Right, you know. Though this theory seemingly justifies the position of Brahman being touched by Maya, it stances a serious defect. If the jiva is the abhasa of Brahman, or only the illusory effect, then it would be impossible for the jiva to attain liberation, since he can't determine the cause, Brahman. He's a shadow. How would he attain Brahman? Because shadow and Brahman, dark and light, don't go together. As soon as there's light, there is no darkness. You can see it's a voidist thing. You just disappear. Vivarana school. Who's this named after? Okay. The Vivarana school established based on the teachings of Padmapada, 9th century AD, and Prakashatma, 12th century AD, propagated the theory called Pratibimba. Pratibimbabad, the chief doctrine of the school. Pratibimba means?
It's reflection.
Reflection. Okay, so we had bifurcation, shadow, and reflection. The chief doctrines of the school are, avidya is a jaratmika shakti, a force of material nature, and is the material cause of this world, right? Because the other two, it says Brahman is the cause. Now this school says, no, Maya is the cause. Like that. It is bhava rupa, a positive entity, but not real. Right? It's positive, but not real. Yeah. Maya, Prakriti, Avyakta, Avyakrita, Tamas, Shakti, etc. are all its synonyms. It is called Avidya when Avarna, a power. What's Avarna?
Avarna means covering.
Covering. So just put that in brackets, right? Avarna, power, is predominant And Maya, when Vikshepa power becomes dominant. And Vikshepa?
Covering. With Prabhupada used kicking.
Or throwing.
Throwing, yeah.
Okay, so in these two aspects, covering and throwing. Okay, so avidya when one is covered and vikshepka when the throwing power is prominent. You know, you say, oh, you're an illusion because you're an avidya because you're not when you're just covered, but when you're thrown into it, oh, that's Maya. Right. Okay. Alternatively, it is Maya at the cosmic level and avidya at the individual level. So they have both ways to look at it. Okay, Maya at the cosmic level, but then the covering, okay, then okay, and avidya at the individual level. Okay, they're saying that the individual is covered. Okay, so they're looking at it from both a vyasti and a samasti. Okay. Avidya rests on Brahman but acts on the jivas. The jivas are pratibimbas or reflections of Brahman in the antakarna, mind. The reflected images have no reality other than that of the original bimba, Brahman. This theory states that avidya rests on Brahman, which is contradictory to the philosophy that Brahman doesn't have any qualities or shaktis. So here is that then avidya rests on Brahman, that rest means it's coming from. The control, Brahman is the controller of it. Yeah, so you see is that then they have this, while the other two schools say, no, Brahman is the cause, shakti is has nothing to do with it. Well, here they're saying that avidya is creating it, but it's resting on Brahman. So in other words, how Shankara taught, then you see is that Brahman is the supreme, and then avidya is there, and there's the aspect of avidya, means, like we'll say, Krishna is creating the universe, but at the same time, the mechanics of it, Maya is creating. It's a transformation of Maya. So in this way, mechanically, Maya is creating, but the ultimate is Krishna. Yes. So they're taking these two aspects of philosophy, but unfortunately because they don't accept the person, then they have to try to deal this with Brahman, and Brahman isn't the one that is glancing and cause of creation. Brahman's just the existence of everything. So now you're trying to explain something that should be explained by personal understanding by putting it into the context of the impersonal. So this now immediately gives problem. You know, you're saying the Brahman is the cause, no, Maya is the cause. Because both of them are involved. Right? Krishna is the you know, original cause. And Maya is the material cause. But they can't reconcile these. So one will be one thing, one will be the other. You know, it's like is that, you know, like any branch, any philosophy, it has its different branches. Yes?
So it's just like when somebody is doing something wrong and you know that he will not do the right thing if you tell the full truth. So you only tell the partial truth and keep the rest aside. Mm. And that's what exactly Shankaracharya did. He only told people that you are part of Brahman, but then if he tells the whole thing that the Shakti is of the Supreme Lord and then you have to follow, then he's the Shaktiman, we are Shakti, then people would immediately feel more comfortable with the Buddhism.
Yeah, they would stay in Buddhism. Yeah.
So then he only told the half thing and then just gave an indication, Narayana Paro Vyaktat. That is actually the Mahavakya, which they don't, which they don't see.
Yeah. So yeah, he said that, but they just, because of other things, then they just leave it.
That is a side statement for that.
Yeah. Like I mentioned, there's one book by Shankaracharya on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Mm-hmm. And how Krishna is supreme. And, you know, it's all about Goloka and everything like that. And the Shankarites will admit he wrote the book, but they're so bewildered. It says, that, why would he write that book? You know? So, you know, they can't understand it at all, you know.
Sometimes they call, like, this book's written by some Mayavadis, this, he went mad and then he started writing.
Oh, they say that.
That extent also.
They said him, yeah, so they don't. Yeah. So you see is that you're taking parts of philosophy and just taking only part of it and trying to make a complete out of it? That's why then you have to, that's why if you're doing the inductive, you can never get anywhere, because you're going to take part and try to base everything on that, and then with that you're supposed to project yourself up to the absolute, and it won't work. That for the descending, you start with that, it's complete. Like the Vastu Traya, Samanabhideya and Prayojana, it's complete. Then, however much one can understand or whatever needs to apply, you can apply that into the into your position and into the philosophy. Does that make sense? So there, that's how you do. You have to descend. You can't start with the upadis. You can't start on the bottom. You can't start with your mundane identity. You have to start with what's the actual. You know, the soul, part and parcel of Krishna. Then you can understand, okay, how did he become covered and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
They dropped the Vedic doctrine statement. In this third one, they are not mentioned about Vedic sloka. Even that they are dropping. Because one of the philosophies, they don't even consider Vedas.
Oh, they don't work with Vedas?
They work.
They work, but it's probably in their, either that or they're comfortable with, you know, like what we said, is that you have that, it has significance, and then you contemplate on it. Because, I mean, that would be the natural. But somehow or another, these two...
Their main weapon is, like, only what we say, the statements of Vedas we say, they are the main. All others have to be seen in light of this.
They say?
Yeah. That's the way they interpret the whole Vedic statement, if you bring any other...
Okay, Mahabharata, just, yeah, you just have to... So that hermeneutics is based on those few. Yeah.
I put this point, Maharaj, to one of the... Now the new philosophy, they say Vedas are not there only. It's written by somebody, not by God.
That is the modern scholar. They cannot be...
Right now.
Well, that's the scholars.
Yeah, right,
that's not
there.
The Mayavadis.
They are not the...
They are some schools, one person is... Really,
oh, but they're from the Shankarite schools.
No,
I'm just saying, the Shankarites would probably be sticking to these, though they've added into this, you know, Ekajiva thing.
More and more down.
Yeah, it'll get weirder and weirder. But these philosophers, I mean, these professors and that teach, you know, comparative religions and that, they'll come up with their own philosophy about it.
And then Krishna, when we established Krishna's position, they now came with a new theory that Krishna went to meditation for 8 years under some guru, and then he became self-realized. I said, where it is mentioned? They say, no, it is told by that guru or somewhere.
Oh, okay.
It's all weird. It goes.
Yeah, on. Yeah. It gets out of it. Hence, the three theories are tainted with many flaws because of not accepting Brahman as saguna, or possessor of unlimited shaktis. Also means saguna, meaning transcendental. Also, one can easily discern that the thoughts of each school contradicts the other. When the shortcomings of Mayavad doctrine were exposed by the Vaishnav saints in the line of Ramanuja and Madhva Sampradayas, many other theories were proposed to cover up the fallacies. So these are the basis. And then from there, you got the transformations of these to try to deal with their faults. Notably of which is the Advaita Siddhi theory, where the author, Madhusudana Saraswati, 16th century AD, tried to combine the ideas of the three schools. Madhusudana also propagated a new theory called Ekajivavad. Okay, so he's the one that came up. He's trying to combine all the schools, and he came up with the Ekajivavad, which propounds that there's only one jiva, which is in bondage, and when it gets liberated, everything else disappears. There were other theories. So I'm sure in his idea, he's the one jiva, right? You know. Right. So you're going to get this, is that there's one person meditating. It's a dream. So life is a dream, the Upanishads say. But the whole point is whose dream? It's Vishnu's dream. Karana Dakshay Vishnu's dream. And so then like that. So he's the one living entity. If you're taking jiva as a living entity. Right? You know, a conscious being. But then the point is that they're unable to get, just like in modern, they look at the material energy And by looking at the material energy, they are able to perceive different formulas that the material energy is functioning under. And then from that, they'll make their philosophies and come up with everything. You know, it's just like they get one little bone from an animal, and then the next thing you know, they have this full form, what it is, what it does, where it lived, what it ate, you know, what it did in its spare time, you know, whether it was better at checkers or preferred chess, all that then they all have. You know? So that's the thing, is how would they come up? It's just like, have you ever seen an elephant skeleton? Right? There's no, from that skeleton, you would never guess they had a nose, a trunk for a nose. You know? So that's the whole difficulty that comes up, is how do they work out what they are? You know? So it's just, how would you figure that out? I mean, the octopus, they don't have a skeleton, right? I don't think there's any bones in them, because they can fit through like a crack in the door. You know? Really, really weird like that. You know, so, you know, what would be the trace of them? So that's the whole, they just see something, and from that then you know, postulate so many things. And so they're just doing the same problem.
Is the modern medical field and all this medical field, allopathy, is also like that only? Like they just see something and then they try to make out the philosophy?
Yes, yes. Basically, they're working. And it's also based on, see, the difficulty also with the allopath is that, you know, in using it for a while, they develop things and all that, because they check, and just by practical hit and miss, they try to work things out. You know, like they just figured out, or just saw something that they figured out, that when you're using the respirator, you know, for people with COVID that have to use the respirator, don't put it on full. Putting it on full can kill them. Well, normally when people have a thing they have to use a respirator, you put it on full. But with this, you can't put it on full. You have to put it on something less. And they just figured that out just very recently.
All those guys who died.
Yeah, that's the thing.
This means they killed a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And they don't hold any responsibility.
No, no. It's just because it's science, so we're doing our best. So that's the whole fun about it. So, but from that they learn. They do learn something. So Prabhupada mentioned, you know, they become quite advanced over the years. But it's based on that. You have that of that. Basically, the origin of it is that after World War I, they had so many factories manufacturing explosives, you know, specifically urea. You know, and urea is then used, and somehow or another in the you know, for whatever it is that, you know, explodes, and so they have so many of these factories, and they put a lot of money into these factories. And so then, basically, two things came out of it. All the urea left sitting around afterwards, you know, when they stopped, then visiting these, you know, places after, I think, like 9 months or something like that, they noticed that very luxuriant growth on top of the urea. So they figured out it's fertilizer. Right? And so then they started that whole, you know, inorganic farming through using the urea as the fertilizer. And the other thing is then these factories could make chemicals. And so therefore then somebody came up with the idea, we can make a medicine into chemicals. So in other words, I do natural things, I have to grow all these things in nature, and then, you know, make decoctions and this and grind into powders and that. That's what they were doing up to that point. But then it's here, no, we can look at what's the essence of what's the active ingredient. You know, like you have the quinine bark, what's the active ingredient? So there's a chemical they call, you know, quinine. And so then that is what's made as the medicine. You know, not understanding that those other 19, you know, sub-elements within the bark, when they're put together with the quinine, it doesn't kill your liver. Like that. But, you know, that doesn't matter. So basically you had it, it's based on an economic foundation. And then from there, then they made a philosophy how to get, because you have homeopath is taking out the tinctures and this, so they, there's an idea. Mm-hmm. And so they just developed it. But it was based, was money. Like you can see now, the pharmaceuticals, it's just about money. If they can't recuperate their money back from it, they don't even research it. That's all.
I mean, Ayurveda also now is becoming like that. Only.
That's there, but what does that have to do with this conversation? You understand? I mean, these are, this is a conversation, you know, when you're sitting around and eating some snacks, you know, some samosas or some maha pizza and all that. You can talk all these things, but right now this is not the point. There, in other words, you've understood the point. So now apply it into this. Don't make the example, the conversation. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So Maharaj, these three schools, these three Mayavadi schools, they use the same approach, but now means to by speculation to create something.
Yes.
And just to satisfy the mind in such a way that there is something new.
Yes, yes. Because speculation itself is a taste.
Yes.
You know, it's just like you bring up some nice thing and you present it, and like if I, like that's a difficult. We'll present something and it's conclusive.
Yes.
So there's nothing to speculate on.
Yes.
So therefore, intellectuals may not appreciate it. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're attached to speculation. But when somebody presents something that, well, you could look at it this way, you know, and maybe, you know, it's like one of our scientists was saying that there's a theory in physics that they can't refute, but no one accepts, is that, you know, and they show all the calculations and everything, that actually we say we're on the outside of the planet, and when we, you know, send off, you know, going to space, we go out this way. They're saying is actually we're on the inside of the planet or the universe. And then when we sense that, it goes in, but it just becomes smaller and smaller and smaller by the effect. And they show all these calculations. I don't know if someone did that just as fun because they could, you know, but it's one of those things. So it's interesting to think about. So the idea is they put up things that are interesting to think about, and then I can speculate. You know, just like if I go to something where someone, you know, is cooks, then it'll be interesting things to eat.
Yes.
You know, not saying this is the way it is. No, it's interesting, you know, like that. So the idea is that you know, Shankar himself may have given deductive points, but he only gave certain points. He didn't make it, he didn't keep put it together as a cohesive unit. Then others who then approach it in an inductive, then they try to fill in those gaps through their method. And that's how then he, what he's presenting may be part of the absolute, but not the complete absolute. So therefore, it's useless. It's good for the purpose he did it with. But then his followers are going to make up all this stuff. Yeah? Yes?
Why can't they say that the Brahman is a material and efficient cause? Why can't they just...
Because then there's a consciousness that's making decisions and therefore having willpower and all that, and so that brings it to be personal. So that's the whole point, is as soon as you bring in the personal, all the contradictions reconcile themselves. But they're attached to the impersonal. Because on the impersonal, you just have that feeling of existence and that greatness. You know, because when you feel, it just goes on unlimitedly. You feel very great. You know, like somebody sees that, you know, on the mountainside, sees the you know, the sunrise or the sunset, you know, from some view that no one else sees and stuff like that. That there's an immenseness that they feel. And that they're attached to that rather than something dynamic in a relationship that you interact. Because they're seeing that, well, what service are they doing for that natural you know, phenomenon? What are they doing? Nothing. They're just appreciating, but they're not serving that. So that's the thing, is they're attached to that position. You know? And it's impersonal because that's easy to understand from the mundane consciousness. To understand transcendental personal actually takes you have to be in contact with transcendence. Because even in the personal, in the Abrahamic, the monotheistic, people came down to teach that.
Yeah.
It wasn't just some local guy came up with the theory. You know, some local carpenter, you know, like that came up with the idea. No, they descend. And then they teach. So,
yesterday we were talking about causal ocean and then the cause and the effect.
Right.
But if we look closely, then on this side of Vairaja, what we're dealing with is actually, it's not with the cause, it's basically with the effect.
Yeah.
And then effect has, you know, different phases, including the cause of the effect and the immediate, but the ultimate is beyond.
Yes.
So these philosophies, they don't deal with the effect, in an absolute sense, only with the effect.
Yes, and they're somehow trying to reconcile that Brahman is doing these things, but the problem is as soon as Brahman gets involved, Brahman can be covered. So Brahman can be covered by illusion. Therefore, then what's the meaning of the jiva becoming liberated and becoming Brahman? Because you could become illusion, because that's what Brahman does. So they just don't think about, they don't focus on these aspects. You know, and then here is that, okay, then Maya is doing, and it's based on Brahman, but then that means then you have to accept that Brahman has the qualities of energies. Then it's Shakti Parinama. So it's the transformation there. And so they can't see these things because they weren't given these things. Because as Prabhu pointed out, they were only, Shankaracharya's business was to bewilder the atheists so that they could be brought back into the Vedic understanding. And then when they have faith in Shastra, then they can be taught Vaishnavism. Because you're dealing with living, it's like when somebody does something, they do it for a long time. So a living entity may do it for birth, after birth, after birth, and eventually start to adjust from there. You know, like Prabhupada mentioned about the musician, 1,000 lifetimes they've been playing music. That's why they're that good. And so that means people get into Buddhism, they do that for many, 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 many lifetimes. So you have to have all the varieties of adjustment, and someone's going to be stuck in there for a while, someone's going to be somebody going closer to taking up this, and then they get stuck in this, and it takes lifetimes. So when you preach, you're dealing with the ones that have already had all that background. Right, and that, and at the same time as we're preaching to catch those who have the Agyata Sukrita, but we're also performing in the Sankirtan movement, creating the Agyata Sukriti. So things like the preaching programs, specifically the Hari Nam's preaching programs, the book distribution, these kind of, you know, anything where it exposes the public, then you're creating Agyata Sukriti for people who have less. And for those who have more, you're adding that one little bit that then, you know, like we said, like Mahamsa, you know, Swami, then he's walking through the park, you know, with his backpack, just traveling around the world, you know, like that. It happens to be because San Francisco is a happening place, so he goes there. He sees something going on down at the main street there, you know, through the park. Goes down there, sees the car, throws his backpack onto Subhadra's cart, goes along with the whole program. There's a program at the end, like that. Then, you know, he's intrigued. All the people leave. He stays there, helps the devotees pack up and all that. Then when they leave, he goes with them. And that was it. You know, so in other words, once he threw his backpack on the cart, he had already joined. He may not have fully understood it at that point. It may have taken another 3 or 4 hours, but you know. So that means the Agyata Sukriti was right there, just needed that one little bit. You know? And then others, you see, it's years and years and years. And, you know, they come by, they're favorable, they like what you're doing, you know, and everything, you know, like, you know, you have some people like that. and that may be, you know, 20 years. So that they never get serious, but they're always they like prasad, they like the kirtan, they like to discuss, but they're not going to practice. So it just means the agyata sukriti has to build. And so if in this lifetime it comes through, great. If not, next lifetime, then they'll come in contact, and then they'll be the one that, oh, you talked to that professor, and then he took up devotional service. But last lifetime, he was the guy that didn't. You know, so it's an ongoing process. It's sort of like that. So that's the importance of putting things out there. You can't say, oh, people don't like that. It's not their culture. What is their culture? You know, I mean, you define, oh, it's not their culture. So give us a list of things that aren't their culture. You know? And at the same time as, why don't you give us a list that's not their culture from 50 years ago and what's now and where did that come from?
Yeah. Well, 50 years ago, it was clear: sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah.
Now it's internet culture. This is like, how can you define?
Yeah, because it says some of those are professing that, oh, we're Westerners, we don't do these things. All this whole internet thing is that, and then, you know, all the young people, that's just normal for them. The older people, it's just, you know, you know, if you can make a phone call, you're happy.
Yes.
You know. You know, how many times your phone makes a call and you didn't make the call? You know, it's like, you know, or it takes pictures of you and you weren't planning to. Like that. You know, it's just... Yeah, so and for others, they can relate to it. So for them, that's there. So if you really want to get, then you have to take every, you know, whatever it is, they take a generation. If it's 10 years or it's 20 years. You know, and that, and so then you have to point it. It says, if you're over this age, then you're out of it. Yes. You know, sorry. You know, I mean, you know, when we were kids, it was don't trust anyone over 30.
Yes.
You know, because when you hit 30, it's just you're a different headspace. You know, so that means if you're over that, then you're out of it. So stop talking about the West this, the West that. You know, just give it up. You know, say. Retire with dignity. Yeah. You know, so it's just that's the whole point, is you can't say these things because the modes of nature, that's the thing that's not understood. We're trying to say it's this place. No, it's the modes. The modes create that. The modes adjust. The modes change. Right? Okay. There were other theories, such as the Kanda Kadya of Sriharsha, 12th century A.D. Drishtatva, which advocate, it doesn't say what it is, which advocates, okay, Drishtatva is another one, which advocates the world's created simultaneously with its perception. Though the followers of Dvaita attempted to refute the arguments put by the Vaishnav saints by proposing numerous such theories, these theories suffered even more serious logical flaws than the earlier ones, and thus the earlier three schools are the only prominent ones even today. So they'll come up and then they'll go down, because they'll come up with these latest, but they have even more flaws. World is created with its perception, but what causes the perception? What causes the world? Who is perceiving? You know, these then that becomes a problem to answer. Unable to defend their theories, the modern scholars of the Mayavad doctrine try to comfort themselves and others by statements filled with word jugglery, such as the following. Though the three schools exhibit a rich diversity of lines of thought, so this is a pro or who's speaking here?
This is the modern scholars, their opinion about the whole thing, of why there are controversies.
But it's still, the view itself is still bogus.
Yeah.
Okay. Obvious. So bogus.
Bogus
specifically. Bogus speaking about bogus. Okay. Though the three schools exhibit a rich diversity of lines of thought. Oh, well, we're going to have to read this bogusness later. Our time is up. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.